Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination number 325. Yes, big episode number 325, coming to you almost live from Philadelphia. This is Paul. I'm going to be your host for today's episode. We are recording a little bit before midnight on the 8th of April, 2009. Hopefully you're having a great week so far. There is an absolute metric ton of news to go over, so we're going to dive right on into it. Before we get into too much else, I did want to wish everybody who's celebrating a very happy Passover. You got to look, for those of you not in the know, there's a couple more days in that, so in case you have any friends that you know are celebrating Passover, now's the time to say it. There's a lot of stuff going on in the tech community. There's a lot of interesting stuff. Some of it's heavy, not so much other side. So, you know, we're gonna do our best to kind of ride the wave right down the middle. Trying a couple different new production things here on today's show. Not gonna bore you with all the details, but hopefully it'll all work out in the end. You know what I mean? So, this was an episode that seriously almost didn't happen. There's just not enough energy in the day to do certain things, and sometimes projects in work just sap every last bit of strength out of you. But we are pushing through. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, so I'm going to give you a quick little rundown here. And today's show, you're going to hear about any of all the following topics: web design, fear-mongering, Linux, electricity, green tech, AP, the Associated Press, that is, Legos, cookies, and everybody likes cookies. You know what I mean? All right, before we get too much further into the show, did want to tell you just a little bit about the sponsor for today's show. The old way is to meet for businesses over the phone or in person. The new way, which is the better way, is to meet clients or colleagues online with GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is like meeting in person, but consumes a lot less of your time and expenses. You can start meetings with just a click. Everyone sees your computer desktop on their monitor, so they can follow along as you move from page to page, topic to topic, seamlessly. Use GoToMeeting for sales presentations, product demos, or training sessions. Even collaborate on documents by sharing screens in real time. I've got GoToMeeting installed on my computer at home, and I gotta tell you, it is really one of the easiest applications that I have ever seen to actually do what it says that it's gonna do. You know, there's a lot of applications that are out there that say, oh yeah, you know, we do X, Y, and Z, but none of them really come down and do it and give you actually the brass tacks of exactly what they're saying. With GoToMeeting, it really is just as easy as I keep saying in all the different episodes. It really is. You go online, people don't even need the software on their computer, they can just go to a URL and just be engaging in the conversation in literally seconds. It is really a nice software package. You gotta head on over there and try it. You too can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days, but first you must visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts for your free 30-day trial. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here on today's show. There's a lot of great news that's really kind of overlapping each other, so we're trying to get everything up and out and on the way without boring everybody with all the tiny little details that are out there. Hopefully you're having a great week. Hopefully everything's kind of rocking out for you. It's been kind of a trying week here at the Caffeination Lair, but I'm not going to labor the point there. We're going to try and just sally on. We have a bunch of quick hits for you here. Then we have a little bit of Geek Cruft, and we're going to move on into the consumable and caffeinated bits, as always, at the end. Quick hits, in case you were unfamiliar, are just really quick little 1, 2, 3 line statements that I'm going to throw out there. As always, all of the links and all those topics that I'm talking about are linked in further detail to stories where people are actually spending a lot more time and giving a lot more shrift to anything that I talk about over at caffeination.com. That is www.caffeination.com. Being this is a Caffeination podcast, we figure it's a good place to put all our stuff. You know what I mean? You can also get in touch with us by emailing at caffeination@gmail.com. There's going to be a lot of new and interesting stories up over at the site at the end of this week. I just got my account upgraded to Google Voice from the old Grand Central thing, so I'm going to be putting a little bit of a review out about that. It happened at like literally 7 p.m. tonight, so I'm not about to write a review before I've even had a chance to make one call on it. So you don't get to hear about that quite yet, but you do get to hear about a lot of other stuff. Right off the bat in the quick hit section, another blog design guide was out there. here because I didn't quite spend enough time when I was talking about copywriting about focus. So I wanted to kind of belabor the point just a little bit and tell you exactly what you needed to know. When you have a blog about a topic A, B, or C, make sure you stick to that topic. You can, you know, venture off from time to time and include things that you might think are interesting to your readers, especially if you start to develop a bit of a rapport with your readers. The same thing goes with podcasting. You have to stay on message. This is a podcast about caffeine culture and technology news, the high-octane world of both of them. I'm not about to start talking about my cats at length because probably not very many of you are interested in my cats. I personally think they're pretty cool. That's why we keep them around. One of them's even named Coffee Beans, but it is a tenuous link to the subject matter at best. If the cats drank coffee, or better yet, if the cats could make coffee, then they would be stories on the podcast. But that's not what you're here for. So this is a little bit of a guide to staying on point, and it's also a little bit of a guide on how to experience and kind of move around to see if there's other topics out there that you might be able to incorporate in. Don't be afraid to put your personality into your show. I mean, I know I do, and I know some people like it, some people don't, but that's what it's here for. That's what podcasting is all about. But, you know, don't be afraid to put your personality in there. Don't be afraid to kind of hit and miss with things, but always listen to what people are telling you, you know? All right, next little thing we have up for you is yet another little thing that we have for you is the simple tool rule, digitally speaking. I have a couple different versions of the article out there, but this is the one that I'm sending along to you. Always use the tool that is least complicated, but is the correct object or method to get the task at hand done. This is the kind of one of the things that I live by. And one of the easiest ways, I put three tools out there to help you manage yourself online, your digital self. Ping.fm, Twitcher, and Evernote. So you can read up on what I said about those three. But the first thing that I have here, one of the end things in the articles, but one of the first things that I consider whenever I see something new out there is I always run through the three rules. Isaac Asimov had the three rules of robotics. I have the three rules of, is it worth my time? Will I ever use a good portion of the features that are on here? If one of these things has a way to make fries, am I going to ever make fries with it? If there's a way that for it to dispense bacon, am I ever going to find that thing? Am I ever going to use the bacon dispensing option? I guarantee you, if you ever make an online utility that dispenses bacon, I will use that feature. I'm just putting it out there. Can this service or tool make a job easier or quicker? That's very important. And lastly, but most certainly not least, does this tool or service help with a common task or infrequent ones? Things that help with common tasks like sending out emails, sending out updates and mentions, and, you know, trying to automate stat collection and stuff like that, they're more valuable than something that helps me do my timesheet once a week. Or even better yet, you know, something that helps me do my taxes once a year. Yes, it's a very important thing to have that done, but if I write a program or if I spend all of my time working on it, it's not really a good value for the time. So I just wanted to kind of pass that along there. All right, next little thing up here about web design. If you ever designed a website or if you're curious about your own website and deciding, you know what, I wonder how this actually looks in, you know, another browser. How does this look in Windows? How does this look in Mac? So you're not going to sit out there and you're not going to collect 15 different computers and 30 different browsers on each one. You'd like an easier way to do it, so I suggest you head on over to browsershots.org. You can literally go Linux, Windows, Mac OS, and even BSD. Select each and every single version of whatever browser you would like. Dillo on Linux, Flock on Windows, Safari 3.1 and 3.2 on Mac OS X. You can even go to BSD, Firefox. You can check Firefox across all four different platforms. It's a really great, unbelievable utility. You do this, and then it gives you a screenshot from each one. It's really that simple. So just wanted to put it out there in case you were interested. All right, moving right along. We're going to start speeding up here in the quick hit thing. Part fear-mongering, part incredibly realistic, and a little bit of an electric boogaloo. Over at the sans.org, the Internet Storm Center, the Daily Diary today was talking a little bit about a news story that came out. It says the electric grid has recently been penetrated by spies. People from other countries have been involved in our electric grid. Yes, this is a very serious story, but the thing is, it's not very unexpected. Spies and malfeasance of that nature happen a lot. There's things that happen like that that it's really not as big of a story as they make it out to seem. What they need to find out is, how did they get in? How can we close the loophole behind them? There's a lot of interesting little stories that they actually talked about and in here, and so I like to see where this conversation's going. I really don't have an opinion on funding this one way or another, because apparently there's, you know, black box funding, there's funding that went off one way, there's funding that, you know, another way, so who knows what's going to happen. But it's enough to know that security through obscurity doesn't work. Just because there's a way into an the electric grid from outside the U.S. doesn't mean that no one will ever find it if you hide it well enough. It means you have to be secure, you have to be transparent in the way that you do things. So, you know, fine folks over at SANS are doing a little bit better job than I am at explaining this. All right, next, green tech, specifically wind technology, is employing more people than the coal industry. This is a very important milestone because coal technology represents the old guard. It's a very dirty technology. It takes a heck of a lot of industry to actually pull the coal out of the ground. It takes even more resources when you burn it. And yes, it does provide you electricity in the end, but what's really the cost-benefit factors on that? So they're saying that in the U.S. in 2008, wind industry jobs increased to 85,000 jobs in the entire country, while coal industry jobs remained at roughly 81,000. That's not saying you can put all of those people on either side out of work. That what it's saying is that even though the lobbying power on the side of coal and oil and all that other stuff, well, specifically coal in this case, might be a little bit bigger because they're more of an entrenched company, the fact that the shift is happening, the fact that wind technology is taking over, at least in employment numbers, it's really going to be kind of interesting to see where this goes from here. All right, up next, the boards still don't work on water. It's kind of a reference to the old the McFly line from, I think, Back to the Future 2, where they were running around the hoverboards, and Marty actually goes over the thing, and Biff's, I think, son says, hey, those boards don't work on water. You need power. Well, these things have power. This is called a little Scarpar, and the idea behind it's a tiny little tread-based system that allows people to quickly maneuver through uneven terrain, be it sand, snow, off-road, whatever. The thing that I keep looking at these, that it's kind of sad when you really think about it, there's no effort being expended whatsoever. You wonder why people have fat kids, you wonder why people aren't exercising nearly as much, because so much technology goes into stuff like this to allow people to just zoom along. So many kids on my block have the Razor scooters with the motors attached. I hope my kid never gets one of them, because I want him to have to actually physically power his own self around the neighborhood, you know? The only place I really see a use for these Scarpar things is actually in military technology. Could you imagine the troops, you know, through the desert or something like that, pulling something off their back, throwing it down on the ground, and being able to zip along, you know, completely independent of any other power source, really quick and kind of hard-hitting? That'd be kind of fun and kind of cool to see. All right, moving right along, the last little thing we have for you here in the not-so-quick hits today is We Are Linux, and then a link to my favorite vid. The We Are Linux thing is a collection by the Linux Foundation of people who've submitted their own very personal ads on what they think Linux is, what Linux means to them, what they think Linux, and specifically open source software in general, does for the collective of humanity. Some of them are simple, like, you know, dubbing over things in cartoons. Some of them are very profound. It is unbelievable animation, and the one that I actually selected is my favorite so far. But it's really kind of interesting. It's, you know, you've seen the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC things. Well, this is what Linux is. And if you've never tried Linux out, I highly suggest you head on over to your favorite distribution. My personal is Ubuntu right now. I also am quite fond of Sussy. So they all have something called a live CD. So you download it, you put it on a CD, you pop it into your computer, and you can pretend to use the operating system without installing anything. It's really kind of cool. So just wanted to put it out there. In case you've never tried it before, I highly suggest you give it a shot. All right, that about rounds out the quick but somewhat slower hits today. We're trying, I got to tell you. All right, the first thing in Geekcruft here today is AP Stink thinks that we steal their content. Well, they do stink as well. but then we return no value. So that's why there's no link for this, because you can pretty much go on any site right now and find a link for it, and I really don't want to give them value. The Associated Press has kind of taken a weird way, a weird stance on how they think search engines should operate. They don't want people like the Caffeination Podcast or like any of the other podcasts or stories out there to use their content at all. Now, where I can, I'm just going to avoid AP sources from now on. I mean, every once in a while we find an Associated Press article to throw up there, but I'm much more the smaller guy content that usually. What they're saying is that by linking to their stories and even by using or saying their headlines, you're actually using their content without a license. You're not giving them any power. So they don't want you to link to them. They don't want you to do anything. They incredibly misunderstand the power of links. The more links that you have from the more number of sites, the more powerful that content is. So if they write a fabulous article about a cure for cancer and no one ever links to it, nobody's ever going to find it unless they're promoting it themselves. And even then, it's internal links. It wouldn't really be that valuable. But if they put the word out and they let other people link to it, they let other people tell about it, all of a sudden, when you search for cure for cancer, the more people that link to it, the more different people of different backgrounds and levels and everything link to it, the quicker it rises up in the search ranks. AP now wants actual preferable search ranking for their content, despite the fact that they don't want people linking to it. They consider it a free lunch that people have been getting. It's not a free lunch. People are trying to take your content and make something of it. So you kind of got to repay the favor. If you're going to put something online, if you're going to expect value in return, i.e. visitors and eyeballs and cachet for actually being that kind of source for that information, then you need to actually allow people to see the articles and see the content. So the one of the craziest stories that came out was actually they sued one of their own affiliates. A station in Kentucky was actually going onto YouTube, and there was a corporate YouTube channel made up by the Associated Press that had embedding enabled. This radio station, I think it was a radio station, this TV station in Kentucky actually was embedding the content from the official Associated Press YouTube channel on their site, saying this is the news for the day, this is this day in history, etc., 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 and so on and so forth. And they got a cease and desist letter, for all intents and purposes, from Associated Press, saying that they were stealing the content without a license. They were a licensed affiliate of AP. And then when the person pressured them and said, okay, well, why do you have a YouTube channel, even more so, why do you have a YouTube channel that allows embedding? Because you can turn that off. That's really easy to turn off. I don't even have a fully functional YouTube channel, and I know you can turn that off with, like, literally a wish and a prayer and a click. It's not hard at all. And then you can hire server monkeys. You can hire people to do this kind of thing for you. So they really kind of need to get their ducks in a row, and you can't just expect Google to give you free lunch, you know? All right, another big company, too. Big companies actually kind of taking a little hit at things. We have the GM and Segway are kind of working together. Everybody is talking about this thing, so I wanted to kind of pass it along. It looks like a golf cart with two wheels. It uses the stabilization technology of the Segways, except it makes it so that you could sit down. Another one of those lazy gadgets that's out there. I'm not really fond of it. It's a two-seater idea for really congested cities. I could see this thing kind of taking off, but there's that weirdness factor. I don't think they ever allowed for the weirdness factor to go away in anything they've done, specifically with Segway. When people look at a Segway, they don't say, oh, wow, that's really cool, I want to have one. They say, that guy looks really stupid riding around on a funky scooter. That's all I've ever seen. I mean, yes, I would love to give it a shot and ride one. It's probably really interesting to do, but it never kind of hit that thing. It's like, oh, yeah, this is the perfect mode of urban transportation. No, you know what the perfect mode of urban transportation is? Your own 2 feet. They're kind of carbon neutral. They kind of work on their own, and all you really need is a hoagie every once in a while. That's a Philadelphia food, just in case you weren't aware of it. It's kind of like a sub, but it's a lot better. Alright, moving right along, we have one of the scariest, strangest little things that I've ever seen in a while. If you feel like spending $34, or $35 rather, $34.95 that is, for 2-pound weights. Now this is 2 2-pound weights that actually have a component that you can plug your Wiimote and Nunchuck into, then be my guest. However, if you feel like working out like normal people should, where you don't need the immediate feedback on the screen, you could probably buy a set of real weights weights for slightly less money that's slightly more weight. Most weightlifting blogs that I've read, most information and most sources say that there is nothing good to come of repetitive motion over and over and over again with 2 pound weights. You end up getting sloppy, you end up hurting yourself, and you end up working out very inefficiently. So this is kind of ridiculous. It feeds into the whole Wii thing. I mean, yeah, I like some of the stuff that's up there, but overall I really haven't found a place in my gaming life for the Wii. I really haven't ever had a game where I just had to sit down and play it on the Wii. The Xbox 360 holds sway in my life, and if I had a PlayStation 3, that would do the same thing. I like games that kind of, you know, really understand where they're supposed to be, and the entire control system for the Wii is really leaves a lot to be desired at this point. It's really fun at parties. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of fun that can be had by having a whole bunch of people walking around because everybody's laughing at the other person acting out. But there's something missing. I think they're missing a lot of games that you would, you know, the traditional gamer would be good sitting there and playing. So I just don't understand how it's going to work. I mean, hey, if you want to come back at me, please feel free to do so. All right, up next from over at solution@allthingssd.com, this is the desktop that begs to be organized. This is an idea and a concept to talk about a different way of using your computer desktop. This is a 3D space that you can organize things in. Now, I've seen this before. There was a version of HTML a while ago. I think it was VRML was the name of it. It was like a virtual reality markup language or something crazy like that. They said instead of talking to tiles on a wall like a normal website was, it was like picking marbles out of the air. And I understand what they're talking about, and I understand like object-oriented programming and everything like that, but this kind of desktop really doesn't speak to the way that people use it. And it really is a huge resource hog. I understand where they're coming from. I understand that it could be an interesting little thing, but who knows where it's going to go in the future. The problem is when you're using that many resources just to display the content, people don't necessarily want to sit there and fiddle around on the desktop. They might think, okay, wow, this is really cool, but how often do I feel like moving documents around versus typing one? You know what I mean? So I'm not really sure where that's going to end up going. All right, next little story we have up here. I hate linking to articles from over at about.com. This is a great one, though. I had to kind of pass it along. This is from K. Chris Hurst. This is the Lego Archaeology Field Report. There are two really good things, and then there's a link to a Flickr group over there. Lego Archaeology Field Report talks about different Legos that were found in the wild, in the one which I thought was fantastic, and then that first one was where somebody actually used Legos to in place of mortar or in place of extra bricks to patch holes in the wall. And then the second one, which I thought was unbelievable, was actually a Lego archaeology dig, which is great. They actually had different archaeologists digging through Legos where you could actually see the stratigraphy as you went down with the different layers and different kinds of soil and everything like that. That is unbelievable. That is fantastic. And I really wish that I had thought of it before that. I did a couple stratigraphy models for other people when I was in college, but nothing ever came to the cachet of a Lego model. I had a tiny little 2-gallon fish tank that I filled with all kinds of different soil and stuff like that. I actually had people digging through it, and it was really kind of very descriptive and fun, but it never really kind of made it past that initial stage. So this, my hat's off to the fine people who do the Lego Archaeology Field Report. All right, moving right along. The next little thing we have for you here is Lego jewelry. Now, I like Legos as much as the next guy, but I really don't think that they really make good jewelry. They make a great wedding topper or wedding cake topper, as we noticed in one of my friend Jimmy and Kathy's previous wedding. But the idea of wearing it as jewelry, it doesn't really have a good line to it, you know what I mean? And it's not precious. I think that's the idea behind jewelry. And even if you make the pieces out of something else, then they're not real Legos and they lose all the value for being Legos. They could be in the shape of them without being it, and it just doesn't really make any, it doesn't make sense to me. So, or you could just head on over to trendhunter.com and view the $75 or $100 Lego brooches, which probably, if they were made from real Legos, they're probably only made from like 16 cents of real little Lego parts. And then kind of staying in the world of high Lego fashion, we have a link to the old Lego fashion show that actually had the minifigs walking down the red carpet in all kinds of states of Lego dress, so it was pretty interesting, so I decided to pass it along. Up next, we have the totally cool link of the day from over at Norbert Davis and the Totally Cool Tech Podcast, a fine fellow from the Tech Podcast Network, sent us in Legos, a form of mini theater, Legos forming a mini theater that actually works. Now, the theater components themselves aren't Legos, you know, so it's not like the spindle, at least it doesn't look like the spindle and everything. They could be part of some weird set that I haven't seen yet, maybe like some kind of crazy mindstorm, but this is a full like Lego theater, like front to back. There's actually a mini screen up at the front that actually works, that you can show a tiny little movie on it. So I had to pass it along. It's from over at device.com. I love stories of ingenuity when they coincide with different Lego madness, and this just kind of went off the chart with how like unbelievable it was, so I just wanted to pass it along. All right, up next is probably one of the coolest concepts for a t-shirt that I have ever seen. It's a very simple concept from Street Fighter 4. The first thing is it has Ryu sitting there doing a kick, and it just has hit the K button. And then the second line down has Ryu doing the fire punch where he goes up in the sky, and you know, that shows you the commands to do that. Then for the Hadouken, you have the buttons to do that, which is starting down, you roll towards the enemy, and then you hit the P button, and it shows him doing the Hadouken, or the Shoryuken. I'm not sure actually which one it is. Then at the bottom, it has Ryu playing a grand piano, and it has a series of buttons that you're supposed to push to make it do that. The progression is easily understandable, and the punchline, that's all I can say. If you have a second, you might want to head on over there and check it out. I'm seriously considering buying this with my birthday money coming up. It's only $18. It's 3 tons of awesome right there, so it's just I had to pass it along. And then if you like the nostalgia of the old Street Fighter 4 stuff, then you might really be interested. Is you know, nostalgia is a warm phaser, and it's set to awesome. That's right. If you head on over to weburbanist.com, you can see what they call the Master Blaster Science Fiction Weapons to Die For. This is a listing of different ray guns and zappers and phasers that have been throughout science fiction. You know, you have stormtrooper weapons, you have James T. Kirk's weapons, you have the death ray, the atomic disintegrator, the War of the Worlds weapons. I mean, just it goes from top to bottom, everything but Ronnie's ray gun. I mean, it's really kind of cool. They even have a Captain Proton thing at the bottom. They have the disc from Tron. Thank you to the people over at Web Urbanist for not actually linking up to the Tron guy, the guy who was incredibly overweight wearing the homemade Tron costume. They instead found somebody else who made a homemade Tron costume. Really not into that kind of thing. Alright, next little thing that we have for you here is, I think one of the most utilitarian pieces of cruft in your life is an Altoids container. If you are unaware of Altoids containers and their very easy use in the realm of projects, then just consider that they're basically job boxes that come with snacks in them. That's the only way I've ever been able to figure it out. Well, the fine folks over at Instructables.com are creating a book, or it's already created. It's called The Best of Instructables Volume 1, but they've released all the chapters online. And, yeah, because basically they're just chapters out of their website, so it's really cool. This one is a collection of uses for Altoid tins, and I couldn't be happier when I found this. I was like, you know what? I have been wanting to use these things for so many different projects. I currently have all my medication in one, you know, that I take to work, like, you know, ibuprofen, you know, something for an upset stomach, like all that stuff is in there. I have one that's just turned into a first aid kit because it's kind of like the successor of the Sucrets box from Boy Scouts, the always be prepared kind of thing. You know, we had to make our own first aid kit to take with us. Mine was always an Altoids tin. So they have things that I never even thought of. First of all, an Altoids tin emergency candle. The entire thing is filled with paraffin. There's a set of matches on the top. This is the kind of thing you take camping, and it's all waterproof. Using it as an iPod case. Using it as a pocket-sized watercolor box. Yes, believe it or not. It's an Altoids case made from an old iPod Shuffle. There's an Altoids clock using the circular ones, which I thought was fun. They had a bicycle survival kit, which I'm not really sure exactly what contains in that, but, you know, they have a mini barbecue, which is fantastic, and they have an Altoid tin speaker. So it's your length and breadth of crazy Altoids love. If you are interested in the tiny little metal boxes, you can head on over there to find out what to do with all of your fun tiny little boxes. All right, up next, this is how you do fan service. I don't think I should have had to say this, but for all of those companies out there that have people who love your product, you have, if you're a TV show and you have a legion of fans who will go to cons and talk about your show, you need to give them something. You need to give something back to that community to try and keep them coming again and again and again. It's one of the reasons why podcasts do giveaways, why, you know, companies give out swag, why, you know, why there's meet and greets with people from radio stations. It's because you're interested. It's because you want to be engaged. Star Trek understands this at a very, very base and very, very visceral level. It's partially because the cult of Star Trek, as it was when the original series first came out. I've heard this story again and again, but apparently the Nielsen rating system was not in place at the beginning of the Star Trek run. So, if it had been in place, the numbers that would have been collected, the people who are actually watching it, would not have been enough to keep it on the air. But because it was not in place, there was enough very passionate people who were commenting on it, who were talking, who were writing letters in favor of seeing it. And you know what? The people who didn't want to see it, they watched something else. It's not really a bad thing if you don't have three tons of numbers if you have passionate following. Just putting it out there. But at a recent Star Trek premiere in Austin, Texas, they lured a bunch of super fans for Star Trek in to watch the first 5 minutes of the movie at the so let's just put it that way. And then they were going to watch the entirety of a remastered version of Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. What happened instead was they were greeted by Leonard Nimoy, Spock from the series, dressed up. And they did not know it was him. He came on stage to introduce the fact that they would be watching the new movie in its entirety. So what they did was not only did they create an environment where fans would have come to begin with. This isn't just like a concert giveaway where if you've heard of the band, you're going. You actually have to be invested in the series enough to want to watch just 10 minutes of a movie. And then to rewatch another movie with people who shared your enthusiasm for it. So beyond that, they actually brought one of the stars from the original Star Trek series there to introduce the movie to the fans. Again, more service to them. And then, on top of it, they created a legion of people who were set to review the film. They were so confident in the film that they released it early to people who didn't sign any kind of waiver or anything. This is fantastic. And you know what? Then you have every other geek on the planet who enjoys Star Trek at least even the slightest amount incredibly, incredibly jealous right now. So you have created a buzz about the show that you could not have done otherwise. So just wanted to pass it along because I thought it was unbelievable, and I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall, you know? I would have loved to just been a geek in the hood, but I got to tell you, it's one of those things where when you're standing at it, staring at it, you say, okay, these people get it. There is nothing else about it. All right, then we're going to end the little TechCruft section or GeekCruft section here at the Caffeination Podcast by showing you what we're going to call the Creepy Robot Child of the Day Award. This goes to a bunch of designers from Japan who've made a 2-year-old child, humanoid robot, who, it's entirely gray with evil, kind of dead-looking eyes. If the robot apocalypse comes, I'm pretty sure that this is going to be the form that it comes in, because it has some ability to manipulate its face, but other than that, the cold dead eyes kind of give it away. It's kind of freaky to be quite honest. All right, moving right along, we are finished with the GeekCruft section here at the Caffeination Podcast. We have tons of consumable and caffeinated bits, but we're going to dive right on into that. Just a quick mention, in case you have any comments, feedback, or suggestions, or even hate mail, if the mood does strike you, please feel free to fire them off to caffeination@gmail.com. And just a reminder that if you head on over to the Caffeination homepage at caffeination.com, you see a little link that says Friends of the Caffeination up at the top. You can comment or submit feedback or just join the crew over there by clicking sign in. You can sign in with your OpenID, your Google, your AIM, or your Yahoo account. It's really kind of a fun and seamless way that if you're already logged into your email, if you use Gmail or Yahoo or something like that, then you can actually comment on the shows without having to go through all the rigmarole of creating an account on the server. That's really kind of fun and cool, so I wanted to pass it along. All right, up next, there's an interesting little thing from over at Wired.com where they're talking about Tetris and Lego bricks in ice. And now we've talked about a couple of these different things out there, you know, like the different Tetris shapes that were coming in the silicon's molds, and apparently there's also Lego ones that we've talked about. I saw that at first. Now there's even more things that are coming out. And there's kind of a Lego ship version that's out there called a Gin and Titanic. It's really wrong because there's a lot of people who kind of, you know, lost their life at the Titanic, who seriously paid the ultimate price, you know, but for just trying to go on an ocean-going voyage there, to kind of use it as ice inside an alcoholic drink's just a little bit disrespectful. But you got to think that this many years after the fact, it might be okay to kind of chuckle slightly, but it's still kind of an uncomfortable chuckle. So I wanted to just pass it along to you. All right, next, if you're going to be making mudslides, the second round might take a little bit longer to make. If you're going to be doing this, this is Eco DIY's pedal powered blender that actually tells the world what's cooking. So basically, by riding around your street, you can run a blender that's sitting on the back of your car, now or back of your bike. This is not, I don't think this actually ends up running on electricity. This actually ends up using the physical motion of the wheels turning to actually crank the blender. So you can be pretty sure that after a couple rounds of mudslides, you're probably just going to have to hook it up to the stationary bike and let go with that. That's what electric blenders are good for. There's kind of little barrier to entry after the first or second drink there. All right, I'm just passing along a hilarious link to a different wine rack / bottle holder. This is a horse on its back with all four hooves up in the air with a bottle in its mouth. I've seen some really funny wine racks in the past couple weeks. I kept like, I don't know if I want to pass this along. There's no other reason. I just think it's really funny. I was looking at this next story on my laptop, and my son said he wanted to eat it, so that's why it's here. This is an interesting little candle that they have out there. Soap. This is cookies and milk soap. It looks like an Oreo being dunked in a glass of milk. It is very, very realistic. It is very, very soapy. That's all I can say. For $8, you two can head on over there and buy one. And if your kid really kind of talks out of turn, you can give him soap in his mouth. But this will never make it into my house because I know my kid will eat it. My luck, he'll like it. All right, next little thing we have for you here from over at 7gadgets.com. One of the craziest, most awesome mugs I've ever seen. It's called Stressed Out. It's a bright orange mug. It's all kinds of twisted and kind of broken broken around. And it really kind of showcases person who's either had too much caffeine or is on their way to getting their first cup kind of looks like. So I wanted to pass it along to the fine friends out there in the Caffeination audience. And then last but most certainly not least, we have an article from our friend Yap. Thank you very much. This is Caffeine Workout Rundown. This is a quick little post on why caffeine before a workout is actually useful. Apparently, it actually dulls down the body's receptors to pain. Not stubbing your toes or something like that, but actually, you know, like physical exhaustion pain. There's been a bunch of stories that are out there, and this is from over at the Scientific American, so you can actually listen to their whole podcast on this. This is like a really interesting little rundown on what this is, but the long and the short of it is, basically, that if you drink something with caffeine in it before you do a workout, the stress that you have and the fatigue that you feel will be less than if you didn't take caffeine. Now, they're talking at the end of the article. I know it's just a little bit of a buzzword bingo that they're playing by throwing this out there, but they say, yeah, of course you can enjoy those lattes before your Pilates. Now, I understand what they were saying there, but the problem with that is if you're drinking a latte, it's very heavy. There's milk in it. I think they're talking about coffee, tea, light, smooth, airy drinks that don't have the milk in it. If you're going to be working out and you have a belly full of milk, I really don't want to be around you because it's probably going to cause some gastrointestinal distress. All right, that about wraps it up. It's a little bit slower of a edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. I'd like to thank you for sticking around. It's been kind of fun giving you the news, and hopefully you're just going to sit there and take it. All right, this has been the Caffeination Podcast. We are your high-octane source for caffeine culture and technology news. I have a love of all things shiny, and I'm passing it on to you. This podcast and all of its episodic little friends are located lovingly nestled over at www.caffination.com. That is caffeination.com. We Weary, proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows, including us, are listed over at techpodcasts.com. And last but most certainly not least, there will soon be a new revamped version of the Puzzle Piece Productions homepage. Being that the Caffeination is a Puzzle Piece production, we decided that we probably kind of, you know, announce that. As soon as it comes around, we'll give you the link to that, but it's over at puzzlepiecepro.com right now. For the older version. The new one's going to come out soon, I promise. All right, thank you so much for listening to this and every other episode that you've given a shot to. Stay caffeinated, people.